Here we go. Hey, Prudence. Thanks for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. So you're a psychotherapist in Ontario, and you've been working for a while. And you're also an online content creator, which is really interesting because psychology content online is really picking up and doing really well. And I think that there's a lot of pros and cons to it. And I was hoping to talk about some of those with you today, as well as just some general psychology knowledge and information to, you know, make life easier for some people. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And I'd love to talk about all of that with you today. I'm still pretty new to the whole content creation thing, I would say, even though I've been doing it for just under a year, but I've seen a lot of growth and learned a lot about whether it's just myself or just the different platforms and what people are looking for over this short time. So it's been an interesting journey.
Yeah. What got you started doing the content creation? It's not most people's go-to.
Yeah, it really isn't most people's go-to. But I guess because social media is such a big thing now, regardless of what industry you're in, and who you are, it's like you can become somebody doing that and share your knowledge and help other people. It's just one other avenue of helping others. And that's my profession to begin with as well. It's like helping other people. So if I have an extra avenue to do that, then it's like, why not? And it brings out that creative side of you as well and puts you in situations where maybe you're not used to or it's not that comfortable for you, and then you just keep doing it over and over again and eventually gets a little better, because I do hate being in front of the camera. Like it's not natural for me, but over this past year, by doing it so many times, it's like, okay, now I'm used to it. Still don't love it, but I am used to it now.
So what's your process in terms of like content creation? Like, do you have an idea? Like, I want to talk about this or tell people about this topic. Where do you get your ideas from?
So a lot of the videos that I do really are around anxiety, trauma, a lot to do with like childhood trauma as well, and relationships. And those are just the three things that I specialize in my private practice. So I find it the easiest to talk about that. Like, I feel like it'd be a little fake or not natural if I came on speaking about maybe like OCD or borderline personality disorder or schizophrenia or bipolar. And it's like, of course I know about them. Like I'm very knowledgeable in those as well, but it's not my specialty. So I'd rather have other people who do specialize in that talk about that in more detail. And then I'll just stick to what I know and what I treat on a daily basis.
And do you find that like by talking about it and creating these videos, it actually expands your knowledge base?
I feel like it does, because I like thinking that I am always learning regardless of, you know, how much education I've had or training or experience or anything like that. So by doing these videos, it's almost like a refresh for myself to be like, oh yeah, I did learn that, or oh yeah, this ties together with this and I kind of forgot about that. Or you also hear other people in your field talk about certain things and you learn from them, being like, oh, I didn't think of it that way, or I never learned that in that perspective. So I think these videos are, depending on who you are and how you take them, it could be very educational.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fascinating how you can take one, let's say, problem and look at it from so many different angles and lenses, and people will respond to different ways of viewing the problem according to their own worldviews and way of seeing things. And so it's important to be able to communicate this wide range of possibilities of interpretation and understanding so that you can maximize who you're connecting with and the different ways of understanding it. And also that there's no consensus necessarily on so many of the issues that people face, because they're so non-heterogeneous. I mean, they're heterogeneous, right? In the sense of that they're different for different people, and everyone needs their custom understanding to fit with their worldview. Right.
Exactly. And I think that's actually one of the things that I've come across doing content creation, and that I have to remind, you know, people commenting on my stuff, where they'd be like, yeah, well, this doesn't apply to me, or this isn't true because in my situation, it's like this, this, and this. And I'm not dismissing that by making a video about whatever I'm making a video about, but I remind them that this video cannot cover every single specific situation that every person on this earth faces. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not possible. Like, this is geared towards a very specific situation that a lot of people are experiencing, but it might not cover a whole range of other issues. So I try to remind people of that, to be like, you know, it might not apply to you, but it does apply to a lot of people. And yeah, that's the reason why people keep watching, because it is relatable.
It's interesting how there is the phenomenon of, like, especially on platforms like TikTok, where, you know, someone will watch a video and say, like, well, this doesn't apply to me. And then, you know, the first instinct in my head is like, okay, so move on. It's not for you, this video. You know, yeah, not everything was designed specifically for you, but there is this sense of people feeling like everything should be made for me. And if it's not, I'm going to tell you about it.
Exactly. And I hear so much about that every day in my comments, that it's to the point where I can't even respond to every single one of those comments. I will mm-hmm. just pick and choose. Like, I don't have time for that. I don't think any content creator really does have time to respond to every single, I don't want to call it a negative comment, but a comment that is just basically debating whether what I said is true or not.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, fair enough. And I heard someone interesting say this about TikTok in particular, is that mm-hmm. where there's a very high comment ratio to videos as opposed to other platforms, and the reason why people may be more compelled to comment their, let's say, negative thoughts about the video is because the way that it works is it's like pushing content to you. So you don't get to choose what content you're consuming to some degree. And what that does is it allows people the opportunity to be like, I don't like this, I don't like this, I don't like this, instead of being like, well, I clicked on it, so, you know, I chose to watch this, so maybe I'm just going to watch something else. It's instead like pushed in front of your face. And so you have to, or people feel more compelled to respond to it.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the case as well with TikTok, because the For You page, it's like anything can really pop up there. Of course, the mm-hmm. algorithm has its wonderful ways of working, where if it knows you're going through something and if you're talking about it, it usually will throw all those kinds of videos up in front of you as well. But you can really get any kind of video in front of you without even asking. So I see where people are really debating about mm-hmm. like, this doesn't apply to me, and like, why are you speaking about this? That's wrong. That doesn't make sense. Or you don't know what you're talking about, all of those kinds of things. But then it also brings up the argument of, there's a lot of people who these videos may not apply to at all. You don't hear from them. They're not in your comments. They just keep scrolling. Like, they may not agree with it. They may not like it. It may not be applicable in any way, but they also keep scrolling. So what that gets me thinking about is really just, who are the kinds of people that have that extra time and effort to leave those comments, right? It's usually a certain personality type that will do that, because there are a lot of people I know, and I can put myself in there included as well, where, you know, if I see things that I don't like, or that I don't agree with, or that may be very controversial, and I've just like, I don't care to have an opinion on either one, I just keep scrolling.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing in me that is forcing me to be like, I need to make this comment to let it be known that, you know, I don't agree. I think it takes a lot for, not even a lot, but it takes a certain personality type to really do that continuously.
And what kind of personality type do you think it is that is always commenting negative things on videos?
Probably people who are used to not being seen or heard.
Mm.
Because they feel the need to voice out their opinion so strongly, sometimes, actually a lot of the time, not very nicely as well, just to random people on the internet, which is what we call like keyboard warriors. they just feel the need to really put their opinion about everything. Like, it doesn't even matter what it is. You could say the sky is blue and they'll probably argue that it, no, on some days it looks kind of red if it's a sunset and this and that. Like, they will always argue about something. And those are the people that are usually not being seen and heard in their personal lives, whether that's from their partners, whether that's from their parents growing up, their family members, authority figures, like in school, whether teachers, principals, tutors, anyone like that, friends, they don't feel like they belong. And in this space of TikTok or social media or just being online in general and having that anonymous filter over you, it's just like they feel like they can finally say whatever they want to whoever they want. Because the majority of these people will not dare to say any of these things in person to a lot of these content creators or just other people in the comments. I've seen people arguing with each other in my comments about random things. So in real life, people usually won't do that. It takes a lot more to do that in real life. But behind a screen, I feel like for people who usually they're not used to having a voice, it's like a way for them to finally speak up about things that they haven't been able to do.
Yeah. And I think that it's really interesting how the screen and the anonymity gives people the opportunity to just voice their emotions, right? And instead of being able to regulate it internally and deal with it, it's just a way to be like, no, you know, it's just like, I'm mad and I'm going to say something about it. And then they move on and they don't even think about it. And also there's this problem of, you know, I can't remember the word, but it where you don't think of the content creators as people, right? They're figures. And so you're sort of like commenting as if it's, you know, a character, maybe is a good way of thinking about it. And then it's not, you don't think about it as like this, oh no, this is a real person, like who has feelings and, you know, is just trying to make, help people or make people happy. And, you know, maybe they don't need all this negativity coming their way.
Yeah. And I think that's actually a good point to bring up because you see this with celebrities all the time where people think that you can just say whatever and, you know, be nice, be mean. It doesn't even matter. You can literally treat them however, write whatever stories you want about them just because they're celebrities. It's like, oh, they gave up their privacy or all of that because they're in the public eye. And yes, to an extent, it's like, okay, that's part of their job. In like, you know, if you're an actor, or you're an influencer, or you are an artist or whatever, you are in the public eye. But it doesn't mean that they're not real people as well. And I think that's something that everyone needs to remember. It doesn't matter how many followers you have. It doesn't matter how much money you make or, you know, what kind of celebrity you are. It's like you're still a person at the end of the day. And a lot of people seem to forget that. I think social media contributes to that as well, because now they're so much more accessible. People in general are more accessible. So if you think about 10 years ago, 20 years ago, when people weren't this accessible, celebrities weren't this accessible, you had to watch their reality TV shows or look at magazines or, like, you know, the newspaper, like stuff like that, in order to find out what's going on in their life, versus now where you see everyone making their smoothies in the morning and what they have for lunch every day and where they go to the gym. And like, you feel like you're part of their life. And when people feel like they are integrated into somebody else's life, it almost gives them that comfort into being like, well, I can make comments about it.
Yeah. Like a friend. And
exactly. So I think now, because social media has made that so much more accessible to everyone, that even content creators fall into that as well. And it's hard for the general public, general society, to remember that every person is still a person, regardless of what they do for their occupation.
Yeah. And it's, I think there's also just a lot of lack of thinking that goes through it, right? Where people, it seems to me, at least with commenting and things like that online, is someone's just mad, right? They just have a crappy day, or they're having a crappy week or a crappy life, and they just need to take it out somewhere. And it's easy enough to just find a target online, right? Whatever it is. And the social media algorithms are really great at finding you things that you are mad about, because you're more likely to engage with them. And so when you do that, you also then open that door of just that emotional release capacity. Now, I'm not sure how effective it is, but it's at least effective in the short term of just finding a target for whatever particular emotion that you're feeling that seems to be just disconnected from the rest of your life, which it isn't, but you know, you really need to do some work to think about why it feels that way, or some mindfulness to really get into your body and become aware of where this is coming from and what it's associated with and resolve it that way, as opposed to just lashing out and finding a target on someone to take your anger out on.
And I recommend this to so many people who seem to have, again, that profile that you just described, always leaving comments on my videos, where, you know what, therapy is a good place to start. So before you go around and continue lashing out on random people, therapy is a good place to start for a lot of the internal issues that you may be dealing with that you might not even know that you're dealing with. Because there actually are a lot of people leaving comments on my posts, on my videos, that are very detailed in the sense that it's about their specific, you know, relationship or marriage or situation that's happened, and then basically saying why my video doesn't apply because their situation, they could say they've been married for like 30 years and this is not the case because in their situation. I'm like, you know what would be really good for that? Going to therapy.
Yeah, personal because therapy for yourself.
Exactly, because my videos aren't therapy, right? I try to remind everyone that too. Social media is not therapy, but if you go to therapy, your therapist will work with you regarding your issues, your specific situation. It's not a generalized thing that hundreds, thousands, millions of people are seeing just on TikTok or on Instagram. They're going to work with you and your specific situation. You can't rely on social media to do that for you. Social media is not a replacement for therapy. And I think a lot of people consuming social media tend to forget that as well. Because I do have clients who come in session and they'll be like, but I saw this on TikTok. So does that mean I have like ADHD? And I'm like, no. It's like, who's telling you that? Did you go through the assessment process? Were you actually diagnosed? They're like, no, I just saw a video on TikTok that, you know,
relatable.
It was relatable and said I probably have it if I do these things. I'm like, okay, yeah, no. Like, you also have to pay attention to who's saying all of these things on social media, right? Because there's a lot of people that really are not licensed or not trained in any way. And it's really just personal experience. And that's completely fine. I encourage everyone to share everything from their personal experience, because I think everyone can learn a lot from each other that way. But the harmful part is when people actually start taking, I don't want to say taking that advice, but taking it very seriously.
Yeah, the self-diagnosis is a problem.
Yes, it's very problematic. I've seen a lot of that over the past year come up, where it's not just one client coming to me saying, you know, here's a TikTok I found, or I saw this on Instagram. It's numerous clients that have done it. So it's a conversation I'm having more and more, that I'm learning that, yes, social media has a big hold on everyone from one way or another.
So when a client does come with an idea like that, how do you handle it? How do you get them to see, you know, that perhaps they are having some of those symptoms, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they have this disorder or this condition or whatever it is. And it's not the same thing. And also, you know, like, okay, let me ask that question and then I'll have a follow-up question.
So I basically approach it in the same way that those people leaving comments all over my videos saying this doesn't apply to me and this is wrong and this and that. I will just tell my clients, it's like, these videos don't apply to every single situation. They're very generalized. It may be relatable to some. It may not be relatable to others. Maybe you relate with like 2 out of the 4 points there, but it is not a proper assessment tool. Mm-hmm. And the only way for you to really figure out if these are, you know, certain symptoms leading to a certain diagnosis or certain things affecting your life is therapy. individual, personalized therapy, yeah. not TikTok videos, not Instagram, that can lead you to therapy. And that can be, there's so many resourceful things on these platforms, but you can't all of a sudden make that self-diagnosis based on a video that you see. You can relate to it and you can enjoy the video and be like, yeah, that's me. Like, I feel like that's me. But you also have to remember that that video is very generalized. Even if every single thing relates to you, it can still be very generalized. But to actually work through whatever it is, whatever that issue is, therapy
yeah.
is a good place to start. And I will emphasize that all the time to anyone.
Yeah, of course.
And if they don't like therapy or they think it's a waste of time, or, you know, there's a lot of people who still think that there still is a stigma around mental health, then that's unfortunate, but hopefully they'll come around eventually, because therapy is, you know, something I think should be standard for everyone. Just mm-hmm. as how everyone looks into their physical health, you get your yearly checkup from your doctor every single year. Yeah. Like, therapy is basically the same. You don't have to have issues or severe mental disorders in order to go to therapy. Like, it's just, it's good for people's mental health.
Yeah, I think everyone can benefit from therapy in lots of different ways. And I think that people think about therapy differently, where it's often thought of like, well, and this is a strange analogy to use maybe, but it's like, well, why would I go to a physio if I don't have any injuries? Right. And yeah. it's like, well, that's true, but you could also go to a physio to condition your body to another level. Mm-hmm. Right. Or to fix some small issues that you wouldn't necessarily call injuries, but that are impacting your function or your mobility yeah. or your flexibility. And so there's always room to improve. And that's why you go to specialists to help you do that and take that journey. And, you know, psychology is so, our psychology as humans is so complicated, and very rarely, I don't know that I've ever met a person who's like completely healthy in every sense. Right.
No, that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And if people say that it does exist because they are them, no, it doesn't yeah. exist. Everyone is always working towards something, working on improving something. It doesn't matter how, you know, you are physically, mentally, spiritually, like, people are always working towards improving themselves. There's no perfect person out there. Perfect doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where we just have to be open to learning and growing. It's part of the process.
Yeah.
People will be doing this forever. It's just the same thing as saying, I am fully healed. There's not really a thing where it's like you're fully healed. It's like you yeah. can learn how to manage a lot of your triggers and work through a lot of your trauma and learn a lot about yourself through that process. But until the day you die, you're not really fully healed. You're just going through the motions of life, but learning about yourself and improving and wanting to improve. So it's not like, this is also an important reminder for people going to therapy, thinking that, you know, it's a cure, a magic cure where you don't have to do anything and you just attend one or two sessions and you should like be all better.
Be fixed.
It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of time and you put a lot into it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't put a lot into it or you don't put anything into it, you're not going to get anything out of it. So yeah. it takes a lot of work and a lot of time. It's not just you attend one or two sessions and you're good to go.
Yeah, it's very effort required. I mean, a lot of yeah. effort is required to do proper therapy, just like it would be for any healing process of, you know, you don't really go somewhere and it's just done. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be nice, but that's not
yeah.
the reality of the situation. So my other question actually was still around the self-diagnosis phenomena that happens. Right. And I don't know what your thoughts are on diagnostics in general. Like, I understand that they're helpful for clinicians, right? They give clinicians a common vocabulary. They help people, they help clinicians understand certain sets of symptoms and how they're related to each other and what it means. Right. But in terms of the utility of a diagnosis for a client, that's where I think things become a little bit more complicated. So from my understanding, sometimes they can be really helpful because they help people understand like, well, what I'm going through, I'm not crazy or, yeah. you know, abnormal in, a, you know, just a completely unique sense. Like, this is something that's common for humans, and it provides this nice structure of understanding that, oh, this is why I am doing these things or feeling this way or thinking these thoughts, instead of just being like, am I just broken or a mess? Right. But on the other hand, I feel like sometimes a diagnosis can like pigeonhole you, right?
Yeah.
And you can get like super attached to it as if it's a defining characteristic. Would you say that, well, what are your thoughts on diagnoses and their utility for clients?
So I agree with everything that you said. So the positive parts of it is that for those who really are unsure of what's going on with them, and maybe they've battled with a lot of internal issues for a really long time, having that diagnosis is like, oh yes, finally, like I know what's going on. And then I can work accordingly to manage these symptoms, or I know the right treatment plan going forward because of that diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But from what I see, it usually works the other way more often than not, where it's like the individual then holds on to that diagnosis and it becomes their entire identity, which mm-hmm. essentially prevents them from actually working towards resolving anything related to that diagnosis, working through any of the trauma, working through any of the difficulties associated with that diagnosis. Because once that diagnosis is not there anymore, or if the diagnosis is manageable, suddenly they're like, oh, well, who am I again? Like, it's that whole process where like people make their trauma their identity.
Yeah.
And they refuse to work on it. And it's almost like an excuse for a lot of things in their life, unfortunately, but they refuse to work on it because once they actually work on it, like, what are they left with? They have to start getting to know themselves and basically figuring out who they are. And that is probably a lot scarier than just keeping that trauma as your main identity, or that diagnosis as your main identity. So I'm mm-hmm. not necessarily the biggest fan of diagnoses. I do understand the importance of it for a lot of different situations, but personally, I'm not the biggest fan of it. I also take a very holistic approach with the way I work with clients. So mm-hmm. it's not just like, oh, you're coming in for anxiety or you're coming in for depression. We're only targeting this specific thing because that's what you're coming in for. It's like everything is connected. And this is what I tell my clients all the time. All the domains of your life are connected in one way or another. So if we work on this, it should improve these other things that you have going on as well. And then you'll see an overall improvement in the quality of your life. I think the diagnosis really hinders that ability to improve all domains. It's like you have to work on this diagnosis first, and then this part, and then this part, and everything's kind of broken up. And that's just not the way I work. So I'm not the biggest fan of it.
Yeah, as if those things can be compartmentalized, right? Which they really can't. I mean, maybe in certain instances, there are certain very specific things that exist individually, like a phobia or something like that.
Yes.
Right. Okay, fair enough. You can treat a specific phobia only. But in general, with like general anxiety or general depression or, mm-hmm. you know, trauma or complex trauma, it affects so many areas that I agree the holistic approach is the best way, where you're treating the person, not the symptom or the disorder, right? And you take their life as a whole and say, well, how is these things affecting your life in these different areas? Let's work on some ways to improve that. But I think that the other point of the self-diagnosis situation is that it seems that, like with online self-diagnoses, let's say, mm-hmm. right? So it's that phenomenon of saying, yeah, oh, that's me. Like, I got ADHD, or I have depression, or I have anxiety, or I have trauma, or whatever video you watch that sparks mm-hmm. that in you. I think it's very validating for people, right? I think they get a feeling of being seen and heard, because mm-hmm. it is that sense of like, oh, someone else understands what I'm going through, right? And they're saying, oh, well, the reason that they're going through it is because of this diagnosis. And so that must then apply to me as well. So therefore, I have this situation as well, which may or may not be true. You don't know unless you do formal testing and therapy and things like that. But mm-hmm. so I do think that that's part of the issue, is that people do feel validated by hearing about other people with similar issues, right? And so then it gets them a little bit stuck there, though.
Yeah, and I guess that's the power again of social media, where we don't necessarily get to choose how other people interpret our content. Right. So we're putting this out there, we're saying whatever we're saying, and how people relate to it, how they interpret it, we don't have control over that. And that's actually real life as well. It's like we can go around saying whatever, doing whatever, but we don't have control over other people's perspectives, other their behaviors, their thoughts, their feelings. We don't have control over that as much as we try to, as much as we would like to. It is not possible. The only thing we can really control is ourselves, what we decide to put out and how we decide to conduct ourselves, what we decide to say, how we feel, what we're thinking. We can't control anything else, but that is just part of now with the internet and social media and having everything and everyone so accessible. It's really, you never really know how other people could be impacted.
Yeah, like there's this vast array of knowledge that's accessible online, but how it's understood and interpreted is subject to the individual experience, right? Which is very complicated, because then you can run into all sorts of problems if you're not careful and not sufficiently self-reflective or self-aware.
Right. Exactly. And it's also, I feel like it's a little problematic in the sense where I've seen situations where partners are diagnosing their partner based on things that they have seen online. Like the most recent example I can think of is a partner saying to his girlfriend, like, I think you have borderline personality disorder.
Nice.
Because because you have emotional outbursts and you meet the criteria based on the little excerpt I found online of the DSM.
Yeah.
And this person, his background from what I remember is like in finance or marketing or something, like nothing to do with psychology, mental health, like no actual training in that to any degree, but is diagnosing his girlfriend with borderline personality disorder. And she was not very familiar with just mental health diagnoses in general. So that kind of caused a little bit of panic for her. And then she started doing a lot of the research. And then she comes to me asking, like, I don't have a lot of these things that are listed in borderline personality disorder. Like, I don't think I have it.
And you're like, your boyfriend's not a clinician.
Yeah, like you need to go, if you want to know if you actually have borderline personality disorder, you have to go through the formal testing. That's not something I can just suddenly tell you right now off of, you know, a 10-minute conversation, but that's definitely not something your boyfriend is qualified to diagnose you with. So I think that person is going through the proper testing now for that, but it just shows you that somebody with no actual background in any of this can just go to their partner or a family member or a friend and come up with a diagnosis based on maybe a video they saw or a post they saw or something that popped up somewhere. And it can just set off an entire process like the one that I'm talking about right now.
It's that phenomenon of, oh, I know what's wrong with you.
It's problematic.
For sure. And also I think what's important is that And how could people know this, but, you know, who aren't privy to the knowledge of how the field of psychology and diagnostics work, is like, well, a diagnostician or a clinician or whatever, they don't just look at the DSM and check off like, oh, you meet these symptoms, therefore you have the diagnosis. I mean, you could do a very simplistic diagnosis based on that, but it's not very thorough and reliability is questionable. You know, there's actually real assessments that you have to fill in and that check, not based on just one sentence, whether you agree or disagree with this thing, about whether you actually have the certain level of, let's say, as an example, emotional volatility that would qualify you to meet that criteria in the assessment for borderline personality disorder, as an example. It's not just like, oh, do you have emotional outbursts? It's like, well, everyone has that, right?
Yes. And that's the thing where somebody who's not very used to mental health diagnoses or just mental health in general, they're not very familiar with it. Mm-hmm. They may think that emotional outbursts or feeling really sad sometimes or feeling really lethargic, like that's just because there's something wrong with them. They don't know that these are just kind of depending on what's going on in your life and certain things, that these could be other things. Like this could also be very normalized, but then you have another person coming in and saying like, you have borderline personality disorder because of this specific thing. Very problematic.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was like, I mean, I'm going to butcher this quote for sure, but I believe Freud once said that one of his main missions is to differentiate between pathology and ordinary human suffering, right? Which is a very difficult line to draw because it's not exactly clear, let's say, what ordinary anxiety, which is normal and everyone experiences and is a physiological necessity, versus like problematic anxiety, right? Pathological anxiety. And there are ways that you can determine that, and fair enough, but it's actually not as easy as it sounds. And so to read a symptom that says like, oh, experiences higher than normal anxiety, well, maybe everyone feels like they have higher than normal anxiety.
That's the same with pain. Like I work a lot with individuals with pain as well, and it's very subjective. Like if your pain tolerance is significantly higher than, you know, the next three people, then it's like the answers are going to, they're not going to look very correct when you're reading them out in front of you. But it's, I think self-diagnoses and just looking at the DSM and going through that checklist, people really get a false sense of, oh, if I can just search it up on Google and I see the list and I fit these criteria, I must have that. But they're forgetting exactly what you said, where there needs to be that formal assessment component with it. Otherwise, that's just like a self-measure, a questionnaire that anyone can fill out and just base everything off of. Then there wouldn't be professionals that actually have to do this kind of formal testing. There would be no need for it.
Oh, it's like you see in the doctor's office, like, don't confuse your Google search with my medical degree, right?
Yes.
It's not quite the same thing.
Everyone loves WebMD when it comes to, you know, if they have a fever or a scratchy throat or anything like that. And I'm not saying don't advocate for your personal health, your mental health, all of that, because I think it's very important. Doctors are humans as well. Therapists and psychologists, we're all humans as well. There can be errors, but you don't want to base everything off of something that you have seen online.
Yeah, it's got to be a balance. And also, I agree. I think it's very important to, or maybe if you so choose, to learn about whatever situation you have. Like the internet's a fabulous resource and you can learn so many things that'll help in addition to your therapy or to your doctor or whatever it is where you can learn those things. But it's dangerous to just take internet as your guiding resource without being a clinician in that area, because you don't know what you're talking about and you don't have that clinical experience to be able to say, oh, I know the nuances of this, right? And so here's where it gets interesting and why maybe it's not quite this, even though it looks like this, maybe it's actually that, and, or maybe it's nothing, or maybe it's, you know, just general issues which are not to be underestimated but aren't necessarily diagnostic relevant. And so it's important to just be able to approach it that way. And I don't know, it's tough.
I definitely think that it's something that people should be more aware of or conscious of when they are seeing videos on TikTok or posts on Instagram or just Google in general, because like you said, it's just with the internet, there's so much information out there that people are able to learn about the things that are going on in their life and relate to that. And so much information is accessible, but it's that balance that is so important, where you want to, of course, learn about yourself and what you're going through and be able to advocate for yourself when necessary. But you also don't want to dismiss all of the people who have actually, you know, had a lot of training and experience and went through all of that to understand what you're going through, and just kind of like dismiss all of that just because you saw something on Google or TikTok or Instagram or Facebook or Reddit or wherever else.
100%. And it's just a word of caution when doing that, those kinds of activities. Just think about what you're reading and who might have wrote it, and you know who you are in the process. It's sort of the general advice that I might give. On a slightly different note, have you seen a rise in mental health issues. Do you think that as a society, let's just speak about North America because that's sort of the best that we can look at the moment, in terms of post-pandemic?
Yes, even throughout the pandemic, not even just post.
Yeah,
I've definitely seen a significant increase, unfortunately. And I predict that in the next 10, 20 years, there's going to be even more because there's a lot of young children growing up in the pandemic and post-pandemic, learning all of these things that maybe like us as children, we didn't really have to go through that. And it's a very different experience. So a lot of health anxiety that I'm seeing will probably come up in the next 10, 20 years, a lot of social anxiety likely as well, just because again, with COVID and socializing with other people and then the distancing and then you can't do this and you can't do that. And the rules are constantly changing. For children, especially young children, that's very, like, that's very difficult to kind of get accustomed to. And then once you actually get accustomed to that, growing up, realizing that, oh, like the world really isn't like that. Then the world looks scary to you. And then as adults, you kind of internalize that in that way of like, the world is scary and I don't remember it being like this. And why do I have to interact with people and shake hands and hug them or do this and do that? And then a lot of that anxiety will come from that as well. So health anxiety, social anxiety, I see once these children turn into like probably later teens and adults that, and I've already been seeing it. I only work with adults, anyone 18 over. And through the pandemic, it has been rough for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I've seen that increase. Yeah.
And just, I mean, thinking about what you're saying about the kids, I mean, you know, for 2 years of their developmental period has just been thrown into complete disarray, right? In terms of almost no socializing with friends, right? Yeah. This sort of global sense of fear from that many people had that they will have detected in their parents and everyone else, even if it wasn't necessarily spoken about or said anything. It's like kids can sense that kind of stuff. And, you know, there was long periods of time where everyone was told, like, stay away from strangers, stay away from people. People are dangerous. You know, they're a threat to you and the people you love. And, you know, the sort of like specifics of that might be different in different instances, but that was the general feeling in society. And then as adults, well, many people stuck with that and are still stuck in that fear mode, right? And no judgment, just observations, let's say. But many adults are able to be like, okay, well, we've been through the 2 years, was rough, let's just get back to life as normal, right? And we're back to hugging and shaking hands and just living life and, you know, understanding that COVID's out there and that you might get it. And okay, if you do, you'll deal with it. And maybe it's serious and maybe it's not, but you have that rational ability to think about it. And you also had a life before then to compare it to.
Kids don't really have that, especially the very young ones, right? They grew up thinking this is their norm. So after 2 years, 3 years, they don't get to be like, oh, well, we're just going to go back to whatever we did before the pandemic. A lot of them were probably babies when the pandemic started, or they were too young to really understand a lot of the things. So I feel like the pandemic really would affect these specific young children probably in about 5, 10, 20 years, like later on. And then the people that are getting affected right now are the people who were teenagers during the pandemic, maybe preteens as well, and all adults. Especially, I'm going to say, if we narrow down to lockdowns in like Ontario or Toronto, where that third lockdown, I think we were one of the only places out of all of North America that was still in lockdown. So if you can imagine everyone, including children, teenagers, everyone looking around the whole country and continent being like, everyone can do everything again, why are we still like this? It can be very difficult for people to understand that process. And that definitely wears on your mental health, anyone's mental health at that point.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, people have different levels of resilience for this kind of stuff and how they respond to it. And that'll have an impact on you overall as well, in terms of like, what was your approach to dealing with it? Because everyone had to deal with it, right? It was like regulation, like this is just how it is. So how do you as an individual deal with it? And can you cope? And is it going to wear you down? Or how much is it going to wear you down? Maybe is a better way of thinking, because it, I mean, no one got off without struggling, right? There was no easy route through the pandemic.
And I think that's something that's important to remember as well, where when we say that everyone didn't get off without struggling, that includes all these medical professionals, that includes the mental health professionals, like everyone is human. So we all had to face the same things, but we're also helping people while we're dealing with our own personal lives as well. So I think that's something that a lot of people forget when they're just looking at like, oh, the pandemic was horrible for me and this and that. And it's like, there's a lot of other people who it was horrible for, but they're also having to go out of their way and try to mitigate the damage that is coming from all of this, and while they're dealing with their own thing as well. So I think it goes back to what we were saying originally about how everyone is just human, regardless of who you are. You're a content creator, you're a celebrity, you're just, you know, whatever your job is, your career is, it's like at the end of the day, you're still a person and you still deal with the same things that any individual would deal with on a day-to-day basis.
And sometimes that makes you a better clinician, right? The concept of like the wounded healer, right? Of someone who's been through it and is able to empathize and connect with it at a much deeper level because you can relate to it personally. Now, you don't have to be able to do that, but when you can, it certainly fosters a much deeper sense of connection in whatever particular wound we're talking about.
And I think it also makes you come off as more authentic as well in certain situations. If you have, like, if I have clients coming to me with certain things, and I'm very careful, obviously, with self-disclosure, just because I know some therapists love doing that and some are very strict about that. So for me, it's more of just if I feel it's necessary, okay.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I've been through something similar myself, or like a similar upbringing, or a lot of my clients are young Asian females and they gravitated towards me for that reason, just by how I look. So they think that, oh, you could probably relate to me in a way that maybe another therapist that doesn't have your profile, they may not be able to relate to me on that level. And yeah, like it's true. You can empathize with them a lot more. You do understand where they're coming from without having them explain it in significant detail, just because of
shared experience.
My own life. It's not something that I went out and purposely I was like, no, I'm looking for this population. It just happens where people gravitate towards those they think are relatable.
Yeah. Who do you have an idea of, like, who your main audience is online, like demographic wise?
I'm going to say right now it's half and half with males and females. I haven't really looked into more of the specifics. I know there's a lot of Americans. Canadians is second, which I'm actually surprised about because clearly I'm from Canada. But it is Americans, Canadians, and then the UK is next. Australia. And I cannot remember who is after Australia. I am sorry to everyone, but it is America, Canada, UK, and Australia.
And in terms of like age ranges, do you have any idea of like what's, I mean, you don't have to give specifics, but just general.
I'm just trying to think again, because I haven't looked at my stats in a while. I would say adults, but young adults. So anywhere between 18 to 35, 40. That seems to be the majority of the people watching my stuff.
Interesting. I'm always fascinated by who's consuming what content, right? And like one of my favorite things to learn about is like the older people online and what they're consuming. That's fascinating to me, to be like, what are, you know, particularly like in the 70 plus range. I'm like, what do this group of people like to consume online? And I mean, it's all kinds of things, obviously, because, you know, it's a heterogeneous group. And so there's all kinds of options, but it's fascinating to see that it still continues in all directions, and what makes people tick and what gets people interesting changes as people age, but also there's still such variety, and it's amazing. And yeah, I don't know. When you started, was there a particular demographic you were sort of hoping would watch your videos, or were you kind of like, let's see who likes this stuff?
Yeah, I just started it to be as open as possible. I really did not know what to expect. I was just like, here are the videos. Whoever watches them will watch them. I wasn't gearing it towards any specific type of audience, but it's interesting to see who has seen my videos now and the demographic that I am reaching on a consistent basis now.
Mm-hmm. And do you find you have like super fans, for lack of a better word?
I don't know if I'd call anyone a super fan, because I still don't even look at myself in that way of being any kind of public anything. Like, that's a little strange for me because I am a very private person, but I do see a lot of the same people reappearing in a lot of my comments in a positive way, which I am very appreciative for, of course, because, you know, anyone who can watch my content regularly and who benefit from watching my content, like, it's always nice to see, because again, that's the whole purpose of me doing all of this to begin with. It's just another avenue for me to be able to help somebody else, even in that moment, even for one day. Like, if I can just help one person, then it's like great.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think the people, the regular viewers, let's say, we don't have to call them super fans. It's great. It makes it so much better, and that you then have a certain people that you sort of know are at least enjoying it, and it's consistent in that basis. And so that makes a big difference.
Yeah, exactly. It's very nice to see that, you know what, there are a lot more positive comments and feedback that I get compared to, again, I don't want to say the negative ones, because it's really just other people's experiences that aren't relatable to whatever I'm saying. But there are a lot more positive comments in regards to that on my videos, which I do appreciate. And I was not expecting any of that at all when I started. I really had no expectations. It was just seeing where it goes. And so far, so good. So no complaints about that.
Yeah, that's great. And are you still at that point where you're just like, I'm just seeing where it goes? Or do you have a goal in mind?
I feel like I'm going to start doing a little more planning regarding what I'm posting out on social media. But so far, what I've been doing seems to work. Mm-hmm. So it's really just about learning how to improve myself and my videos and the content I come out with, and just trying new things, putting myself out there continuously.
No, well, I think it's great. And I'm a fan. I love your content, which is why I reached out to podcast. And I really appreciate you being here. So where can people find you? Of course, everything will be linked in the descriptions and in the comments and things like that. But just, you know, please promote your stuff.
So on Instagram and TikTok, it's the same handle. It's just Therapy with Prudence.
Okay, cool. And I recommend it for anyone who's interested in psychology and learning about yourself and other people and relationships and all the things that you can think about, pretty much. But I think, as you said in the beginning, it's like relationships, trauma, and anxiety are your three big ones. And yeah, thank you for being here. And I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time, and we will speak soon.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye.